on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline from the Hayride.com. Scott McKay joining us. Scott, let's shift gears a little bit, talk about sweeping the swamp. President Trump sending ICE agents into New Orleans. I saw a post recently where ICE had gotten a guy, they were cuffing him, and it was in a restaurant, looks like it was in a kitchen, and the caption was, "Oh, look, this poor kitchen worker, they're just snagging him up." And the ICE agents responded and go, "No, he ran into the kitchen from us, violent offender with a long record." But the narrative is it's all the ICE or the bad guys. It's ridiculous.
That's exactly right. I mean, and, you know, I hate to say this, but what we found, particularly out of New Orleans with in the advent of Operation Swamp Sweep, is that the local media is just as bad, if not worse, than the national media. They have acted as though ICE were some marauding pirate army that was coming to New Orleans.
Jack-booted thugs.
Every Spanish-speaking citizen of the city. And it's like, what are you talking about? The police chief in Kenner is like the Hispanic part of New Orleans, okay? Like, Kenner, south of the airport, is, you know, you might as well be in Houston, okay? Mm-hmm. And the police chief in Kenner, Keith Conley, was like, nobody is calling me complaining about ICE. They're like calling me saying, make sure you help out ICE out, because like the people who are getting carted away by ICE are MS-13 right. And Trendy Aragua. Okay. The gangsters and the cartel thugs are the people that are ICE's focus. And they know who they are because these brazen for the last 4 years.
Scott, is there genuine outrage on behalf of the public, or is this all orchestrated by Soros and these are well-funded?
It's 90% orchestrated by Soros and 10%, organic, semi-organic outrage by, like, the Trader Joe's.
Misinformed.
Clientele. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That are buying into it.
The Karens who like can't wait to get a blast of bear spray in their face when they stand in front of an ICE vehicle. I mean,
you ain't right. You ain't right, Scott.
The useful idiot contingent has shown up over and over and over again, you know, you were right. It's orchestrated by these left-wing NGOs with Soros money, no longer with USAID money, but with Soros money. And they have tried to push this because, you know, they're trying to make America into sort of a slightly different version of Western Europe, where the whole country is run on behalf of and for the benefit of third world migrants. And, you know, they went a long way down that road in the 4 years Joe Biden was the resident of the White House. Right. And it needed to be, you know, put back. And 70% of the people that ICE is arresting and deporting are criminals, or they're under a judicial deportation order. Okay. And they like come with those. Well, this mom has been in the country for 35 years. And it's like, yeah, and all that time you never got your immigration status legal? Like, how long are you supposed to be able to flout the law before somebody does something about
that's
it?
The
let me
definition
not pay
of a
my
criminal.
Taxes for 35 years and let's see what happens, huh?
Yeah. Like, do you think that the local media will go and make a big show of how terrible it is that this poor person who doesn't have any money is getting carted off to jail for not paying their taxes? It's utterly ridiculous.
Scott, if you had to guess, the problems in New Orleans now with crime are keeping a lot of us away. We don't want to go there. What percentage of the crime that's happening in New Orleans can you attribute to some of these illegals and these violent people that don't need to even be here?
Well, probably not as much as I'd like to push the narrative. I don't, like, New Orleans has a very distinct homegrown criminal problem. Okay.
Okay, I get you.
So I like now you look at a place like Charlotte or Phoenix or El Paso or San Antonio, and like now there you've got massive, massive arguments that you can make. Less so in New Orleans, but look, every little bit helps. Okay, last year there was something like 7,500 cars stolen in New Orleans. And the thing about stolen cars is they end up in Mexico. Mm. Like, I mean, like everybody knows this. So, you know, I like put it this way. It's a not zero part of the problem in New Orleans. And so to send ICE in and go get actual criminals who deal drugs all over the city, like, we'll do nothing but help quality of life in New Orleans. And specifically in the Hispanic community in New Orleans, it will do nothing but help.
Well, and when your industry is tourism and you depend on tourism, I would think you would want all the help you can get to clean your city up.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, look, they just got rid of that stupid consent decree that handcuffed the NOPD and made it a not viable law enforcement office. And so, you know, you actually have the opportunity now that New Orleans can become something of a safe city. And yet all we're hearing about is, you know, oh, the poor kitchen workers. And it's like, give me a break.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Give
exactly.
me a break.
Scott McKay with the Hayride. Look, always a pleasure, and we'll talk again soon.
Anytime, y'all. Take care.
Thank you so much, Mikey McCarty. By the way, coming up after the news, bottom of the hour.
Back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Kiel.
Okay, we goofed up. We had Scott McKay yesterday talking about Lane Kiffin, and then the second part of the interview was about the New Orleans ICE, and Ruben has been on vacation, and so he has...
I didn't realize it was a two-parter.
So he's digging up the part one now. You let us know when you have it, because it was interesting about Kiffin.
Just a moment.
Okay.
My favorite part that Kiffin said... Yesterday, he was addressing for the first time. They introduced him. Mm-hmm. He did a news conference. Are you proud of me? I said, news,
yeah,
not press conference.
Look at you.
And said, he drove by the stadium. The lights were lit up. He says, I immediately wanted to start talking like Ed Orgeron. He says, I even called Ed Orgeron and said, man, I just want to start talking like you. I rolled down the window and said, "Go Tigers!" to the fans.
Oh boy, I don't know if you can do what I just asked you, Ruben, but I'm not sure if it's possible.
Just as long as he doesn't go, okay. It's one big happy family.
Yeah. Here's Scott McKay from the Hayride.
101.7 FM, 710 Kiel. Mike and McCarty on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline from the Hayride. If you haven't checked, check out the Hayride, an awesome publication online. Scott McKay joining us. Scott, we finally got white smoke out of the LSU Stadium.
Purple.
I think it was purple smoke.
Yeah.
it's the exhaust from the Lane train.
Well, I tell you what, honestly, I've never been a huge Lane Kiffin fan.
Me neither.
But I have to admit, I'm excited to get an offensive. They say he's an offensive genius, and he's also bringing his offensive staff over. It's exactly what we needed in Baton Rouge.
Well, this is my thing. I've never liked him, but I've always admitted that, like, well, if he was my coach, I'd like him. over the last whatever 10 days or so, I've had to sort of cautiously do a 180 on Lane Kiffin.
Well, I remember Jeremy Shockey always hated when he was in New York.
I hate his name.
But when he got to New Orleans, you know, he's not so bad.
Yeah. Well, that's what you've done. And it's hilarious, like on CBS's football the NFL pregame show, Bill Cowher went off on Lane Kiffin yesterday.
Saw that, yeah.
And wouldn't shut up about, you know, how terrible it is that he's leaving all these players at Ole Miss. And it's like, yeah, let's not be too hasty about that, because he's going to bring a whole bunch of them with him down to Baton Rouge.
Scott, how did this get so messy? What went wrong?
Well, okay, the problem here it's not LSU, it's not Ole Miss, it's not Lane Kiffin. The problem is the college football calendar.
Mm-hmm.
Because and what's being completely lost here is that Tulane and North Texas are going to play on Friday, I guess it is, for the American Athletic Conference Championship. And whoever wins that game in all likelihood is going to get a bid in the playoffs. And neither Eric Morris at North Texas nor John Summerall at Tulane will be coaching their team in the playoffs, because Summerall just got the Florida job and Eric Morris got the Oklahoma State job. Like, they're leaving too. Okay. So, like, you know, this is not just a Lane Kiffin deal. This is what's, and the interesting thing is that if neither Tulane nor North Texas get in, it'll be James Madison who gets in from the group of five. And Bob Chesney of James Madison is likely going to be the head coach at UCLA. And will not coach his team either. So, like, if you're at a school where you're, you know, where coaches do leave and go someplace else,
which I think there are now six or seven in the SEC that are going to start next year with new coaches.
Yeah. I mean, well, look, when you have this much money and it's this competitive, you're going to have high turnover on coaches because, you know, when it's not working, you have to make a change if you want to, you know, be in the playoff picture and so forth.
No.
So, like, this is going to happen. And when it does, this is the time of year that it has to happen. Remember, on Wednesday is the National Signing Day.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Wow. So, like, you have to have a coach in place today, right? Or else, like, you don't have a coach and you're going to lose all of the kids that you spent all this time getting committed for your program. And then on January 2nd, the transfer portal opens. And so you've got, like, I mean, you've got to, by December 1st, you've got to be on the job trying to get recruits and have your staff together and put your program in place, or else you're going to be way behind.
Scott, explain something real simple, if you can, to me.
Mm-hmm.
The players that Lane Kiffin can take from Ole Miss, what are the rules? What are the rules with regard to the transfer portal and how many players can come with him to LSU? Are there any rules, or is it wide open spaces now?
The portal opens on January 2nd, if I remember correctly, and I think it goes to the 16th of January. So for 2 weeks, you know, there's like a complete free for all. Now, they don't have to sign between the 2nd and 16th of January. They can basically go to whenever the last enrollment date for the spring semester at whatever school they want to land at. But, you know, so the month of December is the pre-portal, right, which is all these kids and their representation talking to schools about NIL money and about, you know, well, if I go to your place, do I get to start? You know, those kinds
of. Do I get a Range Rover? Yeah, right.
Yeah, well,
I heard the quarterback was coming. Ole Miss quarterback was coming.
Well, if Trinidad Chambliss is the quarterback at Ole Miss, if he can get an extra year, the chances are very good that he would come. Although, the thing is, there's a bunch of other really high-profile quarterbacks going into the portal. And Kiffin may decide he wants one of them instead, because he's going to be in a position to get pretty much whoever he wants.
Talking with Scott McKay.
As bad a year as Garrett. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, Scott, you talked about the high turnover rate because it is so competitive now. How long does Kiffin have before, you know, the rabid LSU nation, they're going to go, yeah. Hey, he didn't win a championship this year. How long do you think he has before the hot seat starts heating up?
Well, when Brian Kelly was here, what he said was, judge me in year four. Right?
Right.
He said, judge me in year four. Well, year four, he was by far the worst year he had. It was like, well, Brian, we've judged you, and here's your money. Get the hell out of town.
Mm-hmm.
I think Kiffin's got to show, look, and LSU's standards are not unreasonable. Based on everything you have available to you at LSU, they want you to make the playoffs, which is a 12-team playoff. You've got to be one of the top 10 teams in college.
And that's
football.
Not asking too much for LSU.
No, it's not. Your facilities are finished. Your NIL budget is easily top 10, okay? You're paying coaches at a level that's definitely top 10. Your stadium is, you know, your fan base is ranked first, second, or third in every single survey of that. There's trappings of your program are top 10 quality. Okay. The quality of the play on the field hasn't been that level since 2019, despite an enormous amount of money spent on coaches to try to fix. Like, standard that Lane Kiffin's going to be held to is make the playoffs more years than not. And that's by no means an unreasonable standard.
Okay. Can we talk?
Breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarthy on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
We spoke to Tom Gresham about the tragic mass shooting. He's the host of Gun Talk. Hear what he's got to say coming up right after the break. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarthy.
Back with McCarthy on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. My headphones just went nuts. From Gun Talk, heard every Sunday here on Keel, host Tom Gresham joining us. Tom, good morning.
Good morning.
Tom, if I were to ask you, what states have the strictest gun laws, what would you say?
Well, you have a number of states that have really strict, repressive gun laws, Massachusetts, California. And weirdly enough, and I know where you're going, weirdly enough, they tend to be the states that have a lot of crime, which, of course, we keep saying, guess what? Gun control laws don't and never have reduced crime.
Tom,
you're just saying that only the criminals have guns now. That's what you're saying.
Well, yeah, if you keep making it harder and harder for people to protect themselves, then they are mandated to be vulnerable against criminal attack.
Sorry, Aaron.
Let me just say, this is Stockton, California. It's a horrific mass shooting where an 8, a 9, a 14-year-old were killed, a 21-year-old also killed, 11 others wounded in what was apparently a targeted attack. In a state where I probably can't bring my guns. They've got tough gun laws, so they won't have these kinds of shootings, Tom.
It never works. It never has worked. It never will work. It defies logic to think of it. But look, the thing that people are only now starting to say out loud, and those of us who study this all the time knew immediately, this is not some random thing. This is a criminal attack by probably organized criminals, probably gangs, probably related. And, there's another storyline here that we don't know yet. But for the rest of us to think, oh, gee, it was a birthday party that a shooting broke out. No, it was just a gathering of people who a rival gang or some other entity decided, oh, we've got them all lined up. But, and I think maybe to your point, Aaron, it is horrific beyond belief to think people would go in and shoot children. Mm. It tells you how bad they are, how callous, and how willing they are to murder anybody. And my takeaway from that is, if you do not get training, if you're not carrying a gun, you're just a damn fool.
And the problem is, at that party, the laws in California probably don't let you have a gun at a party like that, at an event like that, I bet. Because they want to be tough on guns, you know?
I will bet you that a bunch of people at that party were carrying guns because they were probably members of a rival gang.
Part of the problem, too.
We're going to see what we'll find out. It's pure speculation on my part based on nothing more than watching this for 50 years. But, you know, I'm guessing that's what they're going to find out.
And I would bet, too, and I'd stake my, you know, reputation on it, that the people that shot them up don't legally have the right to even own guns.
Well, that's a great point. They're going to find that, gee, these are people who are prohibited and are not allowed to legally own a gun. Oh, guess what? That doesn't matter either.
You mean that felon was carrying a firearm? He wasn't supposed to be. He's a felon.
He wasn't following the law?
Now, you know, of course, the one thing is, you do have the means, the prosecutors do have the means to not have these people shooting people, because if they're in prison, they don't shoot people at a birthday party.
Exactly. So the whole myth of stricter gun laws will stop mass shootings, I know you want to say nasty words about that, but it's simply malarkey.
The reality is, no gun control law in the United States has ever reduced crime. Not a single one. They just don't work. And look, we can talk about the greater societal thing and all the rest of it, but I like to drill it down. You know, when we're talking on gun talk, I say, look, people, you can't fix these bigger issues, and you know, you can talk about passing gun laws and all the rest of it. The reality is, you have to take care of yourself, and you have to take care of your family. And what are you going to do about that? And complaining about it on social media doesn't count as being effective, people.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, Tom, we're talking with Tom Gresham, host of Gun Talk. And yet, Tom, after an incident like this, the first thing the left will say is, well, we need more gun control. We need more gun laws. I mean, that's the first thing they say. It's almost comical.
Well, it is comical because California is like the Garden of Eden for gun control. They have everything they want, except the one they really, really want. Occasionally, they'll actually say it out loud. They'll slip, which is a total confiscation of guns. I mean, they want you to have no guns. But, of course, then again, the criminals still won't comply, so they'll be the only ones to have guns. And I go back to, what are you prepared to do about it? What are you going to do to protect yourself and your children? You know, are you going to make a commitment? Or are you just going to wring your hands and go, isn't this terrible? Oh, my goodness. They should do something about it. No, there's no they. Mm-hmm. There's just you. What are you going to do to protect your children? What are you going to do to protect yourself?
And I know personally from folks that have moved to California, probably against their will, but have moved for job-related, and they've had to leave guns here. Uh-uh. They've had to leave them in Louisiana because they can't take them to California, the guns they own.
Aaron, I have been offered very good jobs in places where I couldn't take my guns. There's no amount of money on the planet that would make me take a job and move to a place like that. None.
My daughter, when she lived in Dallas, somebody broke into her backyard through the fence and tried to get into her house. And when the police did arrive, my daughter was in the backyard and she's holding her Glock in her hand and her two dogs. And she said, the policeman, she goes, Dad, I have to tell you, the policeman looked at me and he says, you've got a Glock. You look like you know what you're doing with. You got two big dogs. He says, your dad taught you right. I said, I'll take that credit because I have taken her to the range. She knows how to use it.
Mm-hmm.
And taking responsibility. It's like, you know, there is no, they should do something or I will call, you know, people who say, well, I have a phone, I'll call 911. I'm sorry. You're offloading your responsibility to protect yourself. Do not send this to somebody else and expect them to take responsibility for making you safe. You are the one who's responsible for keeping yourself and your family safe. Own it. Do it. Mm-hmm. Be responsible. Go get the training. Get the gun. Carry it when you can and everywhere you can, and be responsible for your safety, because no one else is.
Yeah, it just made me crazy when I saw that today, and I thought about you, so I was reaching out. Thank you for joining us, my friend.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we're going to find out this was not your average, deal where people suddenly got surprised. Everybody knew who the shooters were. They all knew each other.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Tom Gresham, host of Gun Talk, heard on Keel every Sunday. Tom, thank you so much.
Take care, guys. Be safe.
We'll talk to you soon. 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty.
Get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
I want to sound like Pete when I grow up.
Pete's a good guy. He's a good guy.
Told you the first time I ever met him.
Mm,
Keel, downtown.
Okay.
Second floor, and right in the control room was on the corner. And I think he was doing middays at the time.
All right.
And I was on KMBQ. Mm-hmm. And Tom Michaels was taking me around, introducing me. And he and Pete was in the little ante room, kind of a little table out there. And
mm-hmm.
Tom said, "Pete, this is our new guy, Mike Martindale. He's going to be on the air at KMBQ." And Pete looks up at me, and I can't tell you what he said.
Pete is not known for his bedside manner.
Well, it wasn't serious.
Right,
I was 20 years, I was a kid and legend, and I was like,
right.
I still obviously remember that to this day, yeah. Some 40 years later.
He's a great really guy. Great guy. He's been in the business, years.
Yeah, hear him on Toyota commercials.
Oh, yeah. He
Toyota,
did.
The
Denver Nuggets. He was their guy for a long time. I mean, he's done all
kinds.
He's
in Chicago now, I think.
I think so, yeah. He's what a nice guy. And because he and I are friends,
yeah,
he doesn't charge us. Don't tell anybody that.
Don't say that.
He charges us a fortune.
Yeah, you can't afford him. Yeah.
When I leave, they're not going to be able to afford him. I'm just warning you.
Right, exactly. Coming up after the news, top of the hour, this is exciting. 14-year-old Shreveporter just tearing it up on The Voice.
Mm-hmm.
Max Chambers.
Wow. If you missed it last night, holy cow. And we will replay his song from last night.
Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com. Okay, I have to confess, first of all, I don't watch reality TV. I say parenthetically.
Well, I do, and I haven't watched The Voice until this year.
I've seen clips
recently,
like on YouTube. A lot of Voice auditions, and can you hear the when they turn around,
yes,
and the judges are all captivated.
Yes.
I've seen a ton of those.
Mm-hmm.
Britain's Got Talent, all of those. I've probably seen hours of stuff.
Right.
But as far as sitting down and watching the show and following the show.
I'm getting hooked in.
I never have.
I haven't watched any of those singing shows in probably about 5 years. But I'm watching now because
this is exciting.
We have a Shreveporter on The Voice. If you haven't heard yet, his name is Max Chambers. He's 14. I believe he was a student at CMM. He's now in the virtual academy now that he goes to school on. But he's really wowing the public and the judges and all of America. And last night was the playoff rounds where he sings up against members of his own team. He's on the Michael Bublé team. And so he sings against members of his team. And then Michael Bublé decides which one of, I think, his final four, which one he's going to pass through to the finals. And so last night, Max Chambers, holy cow, He pulls out this from Sam Cooke. He didn't get pushed forward by Bublé.
Now, you were explaining that.
It's not good news.
Well, but doesn't the public get to vote?
Here's the deal. There are two wild card spots.
What's the deal?
each judge pushes one forward. Bublé pushed someone else forward from his team, Jazz McKenzie. But I think Bublé did it because he knows Max has got a good chance at winning one of the wild card spots. So Bublé wanted two of his people in the finals. So he pushed Jazz McKenzie forward. He thinks Max is going to get the vote for the wild card. So you got to check the voice. And when the wild card, it may be over for last night, but I know next week there'll be more voting. You got to be sure you vote for Max so that he gets one of those two wild card spots and is in the finale. So it's so exciting. Absolutely exciting.
Operation Santa Claus got underway. Did you see the kids in the building yesterday?
Oh, my gosh. They're adorable.
They had our conference room all set up with trees, and Santa came in.
Mm-hmm.
They were so, I don't know, what, they have 50 kids in here in the building?
Adorable, from North Highland. They were so cute.
So cute.
Mm-hmm.
And so our own Greg Adams is out and about. You can already start to make a difference for children in our area that might not otherwise have a very Merry Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
We'll check in with Greg Adams after the break. Mikey McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel. Be sure to download the free Keel app.
More breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Operation Santa Claus officially kicking off. We've been doing this, Aaron, when I was here doing mornings 30-something years ago.
I was here when we started.
Yes. Yep, Operation Santa Claus. Mm-hmm. Police and firefighters nominate children just during the run of the year when they're on a call and they see somebody that looks like they need help. That's how the names are chosen. Greg Adams is out and about on how you can make a difference. Greg, good morning.
Morning, folks.
Where are you?
I am standing right off the road. We are Brookshires on Mansfield Road this morning. I am surrounded by flashing lights, and for the first time, it's not because of me.
What do we need this year for Operation Santa Claus? What's on the list?
The same thing that every year. We're looking for bikes. Bikes, things with wheels, scooters, skateboards, those are the things that are most in demand. But honestly, the best thing that you can do if you don't have a trunk full of bikes is a monetary donation, because really the Shreveport Police Department and Shreveport Fire Department have some great partners that they can go to and say, hey, we need to buy 150 bikes this year, and they can get a discount that we couldn't get if we went to try and do the same thing. So if you can make a monetary donation here at Brookshires on Mansfield Road this morning or any of our Operation Santa Claus stops, that's one of the best things you can do, because they can leverage your monetary donation to get more than we could on our own.
I love the fact that these are children that have been identified by the police and fire department, like Mike said, and they're not people that just sign up because they want to get all the freebies they can. You cannot sign up to be on this list. These are kids that we know may not have a Christmas if we don't step up, right?
Right. And the thing that I love about this, I've done a lot of these type of charities in my life, in my radio career, and this is one of the first ones that I can guarantee when you make a donation, it stays right here in the community. There are a lot of charities where they've got big CEOs states away, and part of your donation needs to go pay that salary. They might take that new unwrapped toy, send it to a warehouse in Virginia, and you have no idea where that toy is going to go. When you donate to Operation Santa Claus, you are guaranteed that your donation is going to stay right here in our area, because these are kids and families that these firefighters, these police officers have personally come in contact with. They will personally donate your toys. They will personally take those to make sure that these families in our area have a Christmas. So this is the most direct you can get when it comes to a holiday charity.
So you're saying, Greg Adams, that any donation made is not going to pay you, going to pay your huge salary, right?
I am not the CEO of Operation Santa Claus. I do not have a salary. We are all doing this out of the kindness of our heart. This literally, I mean, go ahead, look up some of these charities. Look up how much goes into the administration of a charity. This charity is literally these firefighters, these police officers. I standing here, we are all literally volunteers. There's nobody getting paid through Operation Santa Claus. So 100% of your donation is going directly to the charity.
And I love, because I've been over the years, I've been on the deliveries with some of these police officers and firefighters. And I love the fact that most of the time these children don't see police officers or firefighters unless there's some sort of tragedy in their life. This is a whole different thing. These police officers are bringing joy. These firefighters are bringing joy. And to see those smiles, I can't even tell you how much that means.
And the only way that happens is that when you stop by. We're here at Brookshires on Mansfield Road, and the only way that we can deliver those smiles is when somebody pulls up and they've got a trunk full of toys, they've got a couple of bikes in the back of the truck, they've got a monetary donation, and it's cold this morning. Nobody wants to get out of the car. That's why we have a tunnel right now of fire trucks and police vehicles that you can just drive through. We've got firefighters and police officers, there's at least a dozen of them out here, who can come to your window and get your donation. They can pop the trunk and get whatever you have out. You don't have to leave your vehicle. We are here with a ton of folks who are all here for the same cause. Brookshires, Mansfield Road, we're going to be here until 9 o'clock this morning to take these donations.
Thanks for doing what you're doing, Greg. It's one of those things that's near and dear to my heart, and we need to help our local kids who otherwise may not have a visit from Santa Claus this year.
Yeah, this is local, 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 100% local. I can't stress that enough.
Mm-hmm. And I will point out that Greg was talking about all the money goes to the Operation Santa Claus. When we do remotes, we get a talent fee, and we go out and we're promoting something. You're not getting a talent fee for this.
No.
This is all volunteer, and we just ask people to go out and help.
Literally everybody here, this is all volunteer. These guys are off the clock. These guys are doing this out of the kindness of their heart. We are all here just for the donations for the charities. Brookshires, Mansfield Road, till 9 o'clock this morning.
Greg Adams, thank you so much, Greg. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Chris Crackman, Caddo Parish Commissioner, is going to join us coming up in about 10, 12 minutes. We're going to talk about the Caddo Sheriff substation problems and the revenue bond. Does it include pickleball or no? We will catch up with him as his official role as a Caddo Commissioner. That's coming up.
Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel.
Big Stories of the Day with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
Well, the sheriff wants to buy a new substation property. North Market apparently crumbling to the ground.
Mm-hmm. Bad shape.
Why did we let it get in bad shape would be my first question.
That's a big question.
Also, the $10 million in revenue bonds. How much is going to pickleball? We've got Caddo Parish Commissioner Chris Crackman in his official capacity as commissioner going to join us coming up right after the break. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710 Keel, and on the free Keel app.
Back Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
Caddo Parish Commissioner Chris Crackman joining us on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Chris, good morning.
Morning, guys. How are y'all?
Doing great. Thank you for joining us.
What is the status with regard to what Sheriff Henry Whitehorn wants with regard to the North Market substation? We want to move out of that and a new location. Explain what's going on.
Well, more or less, he has, you know, made us aware that he wants to move and where he wants to move to. We don't know the exact numbers on, you know, how much the place cost or what it's going to take to retrofit it or move to it or anything like that. So more or less, we're letting Sheriff Whitehorn know what we're offering instead of, you know, saying what exactly do you want. We're putting the cards on the table and saying here's what we've got.
So what is he's wanting the Mitsubishi complex? Tell us what he's looking at and where is it?
Yeah, it's the former Mitsubishi place over there. I can't even remember where it's at, but it's kind of ironic because I just bought a car there right before they went out of business. So I'm a little, you know, still a little sore about it.
Is it in the auto mall?
Yeah. Sheriff Whitehorn could have gave me a heads up, as a matter of fact. But no, I mean, it's the old, I can't think of the name of it. It's the old Mitsubishi dealership, and it's a nice facility, and it has a shop and all of the needs and wants that they have to where they can centrally locate, you know, all of their offices and everything. And you know, it would be a nice addition to all the places that they have. But, of course, we want to be as fiscally responsible as possible and as prudent as possible. And, you know, this other facility that they have is, you know, allegedly dilapidated. I haven't been there. I've seen the slides and the photographs. We have three commissioners that paid that facility a visit, and they all agree that it's dilapidated and it has mold and all these other things. It seems a little tricky because I guess we're on the hook for the health, safety, and welfare of all of those, you know, officers that work there. But allegedly they're working in a unsafe atmosphere. So I don't know how long we have to fix what they have or get them out of there or whatever, but a decision does need to be made, you know, either way, whether we're going to fix what they have or move them. But you know, yesterday I would have liked to have had a little bit more information on the cost because, you know, we can act like a lot of this money falls out of thin air or it comes out of, you know, our own pocket or it's a donation or something like that. But at the end of the day, whether it be the Caddo Parish Sheriff's Department or the Parish of Caddo's dollars, it is your dollars. It's tax dollars. So, you know, I want to be as fiscally responsible as possible.
Okay. I understand the building may be $5.5 million. What would be the parish's share? And the sheriff is going to pay for some. Am I hearing that right?
Right. And I don't remember what it was he was asking for. I want to say it was 2.8 mil, something like that from us. And it more or less wanted us to pay half of that, half of the retrofit, and then not maintenance it for up to 4 years, that they would foot that bill. And again, I don't remember what all the ask was. I do know it was a little non-specific, and that's kind of what I was asking for yesterday. And I think what we have put on the table is, you know, 2.5, and kind of see what Whitehorn things about that. Of course, you know, we have a budget meeting today, and we'll talk about it some more. I think it, you know, it might be a long conversation, but there's no doubt in anybody's mind that we want to do something different or better, whether it be fix what they have or move them. You know, a lot of folks were talking about, you know, supporting the guys in blue, and, you know, these are our first responders and all this other. Well, all 12 of us support our guys in blue. We all want to see them in a better scenario, better conditions. There's no question about that. It's just how much of, you know, taxpayers' dollars do we want to put toward it?
So it's standing at 2.5 right now. Let me switch gears for just a moment, Chris Crackman, Caddo Parish Commissioner, and talk about the $10 million revenue bonds. And one of the big hopes is the pickleball complex. Is this money, is any money going to be dedicated specifically for the pickleball park, or is it all general funds?
See, I didn't know we were talking about the P word. Now I feel a little uncomfortable. no, you know, the revenue bonds, as far as I know, which is not much, you know, y'all could have called somebody a little more educated than I, but as far as I gather, the revenue bonds are nonspecific. They don't have pickleball written all over them. It's $10 million, for facilities. And if you go back and listen to the interview with our state treasurer that y'all did, he made that, you know, pretty crystal clear that those bonds could be used for CCC, juvenile justice, Caddo Parish Courthouse, you know, all these existing buildings and so forth. So they are nonspecific. So, you know, if we wanted to, we could say, hey, let's take a sliver of this 10 mil and put it toward Whitehorn's, you know, venture over there at the old Mitsubishi place. I don't believe we'll do that, but it is a potential.
Now, you voted against the revenue bonds. I think you were the only one. Explain why you said we don't need to be going out and borrowing this money right now.
Well, look, again, you know, I have to look at it like I'm spending somebody else's money, and I am. We are. I don't think that that's the most responsible venture we could go into. I don't think a pickleball complex is the most intelligent thing we could do. I hope I'm wrong. But, you know, I stand by that. And my constituents, you know, all the ones that reached out to me, they agree with me. I had one constituent that disagreed with me and asked that I support the $10 million revenue bonds. Now, these revenue bonds are available because it, you know, it went out to a public vote for Walter B. Jacobs' upgrade. Mm-hmm. That was what the people voted for, and it is complete. We're doing the ribbon cutting on Thursday. Mm-hmm. And so the people got what they voted for. Now, if there's change, you know, that's a different story. I believe that folks should be able to have a say whenever we spend millions of dollars. We're not buying a new office chair. We're right. Spending $10 million.
And I got a question about that Chris. Chris Crackman. I got a question about that exactly from someone who has been in a leadership position in our community. How about government not take the most expensive properties in our city? I mean, that's an expensive property. Couldn't we do better with with something that's not quite that pricey?
Sure, I would imagine. And you know, they did a lot of studies as far as the location of it. And everything. I think a lot of the commissioners would like to see something a little more centrally located. I don't know. You know, whether it be centrally located or not, whether it be an expensive property or a cheap property, $10 million investment is ridiculous to me as far as taxpayer dollars goes, especially whenever, you know, OJJ has a deficit. You know, juvenile justice, it's behind. We failed a bond. The general public failed a bond. You know, to upgrade juvenile justice. Mm-hmm. So that problem still exists.
Yep.
CCC being, you know, overhoused, that problem still exists. And now we have a new problem with the substation being dilapidated. So, you know, we're piling up our problems and we're not piling up our solutions, but we're putting $10 million towards pickleball. I hate to be the bad guy in the room, but I do think that is not very fiscally responsible of us with $10 million worth of revenue bonds.
Mm-hmm. But it's not just putting it into pickleball for locals to go play. It's actually an investment to bring a lot of tournaments here as revenue generating for the entire area.
Right. It's your government and a group of bureaucrats and your elected officials that are going into what otherwise would be a private business. I don't think the government should be going into business, especially, you know, as far as bringing in tournaments and tourism and all this other. I don't think that that's our job. And, you know, it's funny because a lot of us conservatives, we want to go out here and talk about Zohran Mamdani and making government-owned grocery stores, and we're kicking and screaming about New York. But when we want to open a sports facility here locally on the same kind of rhetoric, it's a different story. And I think that that's kind of comical, to be honest, but I do think that this should be a private venture. I mean, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, you know, this would be a lot better if this were private, but I support it. I don't.
Well, the Superdome is not a private venture, but we're out of time. We can go deep into that. But I understand what you're saying and appreciate you taking the time to join us.
Sure, no problem at all. I was kind of hoping to hear somebody talk on this matter that was a little more educated on it than me, so maybe y'all could fish somebody up.
We have requested the sheriff to join us, so we're working on that, and we will also get another commissioner on to talk about that one day this week.
Excellent.
Chris, thank you so much.
All right, thank y'all.
Talk to you soon. Mike and McCarty. Coming up after the news, top of the hour, Independence Bowl, who are they looking at? Narrowing down the search as we get closer. Missy Setter is going to join us. Mike and McCarty, 1017 FM, 710keel.com.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 1017 FM and 710 Keel.
I don't know. Yes.
I'm going to follow up real quick because you asked a brilliant question, but not on the air. Perhaps you did on the air and I missed it. Why do we keep letting our government buildings get like they're getting?
You're right. It was during because we're talking about the North Market Sheriff Substation. It's being described as dilapidated.
Mm-hmm. Look around this building. If there were mold in here, we would scream bloody murder,
well,
and corporate America would fix it.
Shreveport Police Department headquarters.
Yes.
Dilapidated.
Why does government let that happen?
And that was my question about North Market Substation. Why did we let it get to this point?
And this is not a Henry Whitehorn
problem.
It's not
like you're not in there every single day.
And again, we're not, again.
No. I'm not faulting any particular administration.
Right.
I'm asking as a general rule, why do we let this happen?
And why isn't somebody watching it and waving a red flag going?
Remember the fire station out way south,
yes,
Shreveport by the port, mold I don't get it. I don't understand.
It just doesn't happen in the private sector, and in the government world, it happens, and we act like, oh, it's just mold. There's just mold. We're just going to work in the mold and leaks over my desk. I mean, why are we not, somebody isn't screaming about that every day?
And let's take care of it before it turns into a $10 million problem.
When you see a little leak, let's get the crew in and fix it.
We have maintenance crews on staff, don't we?
Yes.
On city payroll, on parish payroll.
You bet we do.
We've got maintenance staff.
It's real frustrating because it seems to happen to government way more than it happens in the private world. And I know, and now it's talking about it's a health hazard now.
Yeah, of course it is. Mm. Missy Setter's Independence Bowl update next, 1017 FM, 710 Keel. Mike and McCarty. On the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline, Missy Setters from the Independence Bowl, the Radiance Technologies Independence Bowl, joining us. Missy, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How are you?
Well, we're doing very well. Thanks for jumping on with us. We're getting closer. How's it looking?
Well, we'll know something Sunday as far as our matchup. Got to watch the championship games Friday and Saturday this weekend and see what happens there. And that will determine who we have in our bowl game this year.
Who's on your short list right now?
The list isn't that short. It's still pretty wide open based on phone calls yesterday. And I think looking at it right now, it looks like if Texas Tech wins the Big 12 championship game, we should have a Big 12 team, but there's still an outside possibility that BYU could get into the playoff even if they lose. So we're watching that. Look at the rankings when they come out tonight, the playoff rankings, and that'll be somewhat of an indication of what might happen. And then on the Conference USA side, that's still wide open too. So if we have a Big 12 team, I would look for probably Kansas State, possibly Cincinnati, and I think outlier might be Houston and TCU, but we're not so sure about that. We're just kind of hearing those things right now. And then on the Conference USA side, that's still pretty wide open. I think Western Kentucky, Jacksonville State, Louisiana Tech, and possibly another one are in the mix on that side.
So out of all the teams that are in the mix, what would your ideal setup be?
I don't usually have that.
No,
and there's so many different possible scenarios. You know, looking at it, if Team A wins this championship game, how does that affect all of the trickle-down from there and who the bowls are going to pick? And you look at which teams played in which bowls last year and try to get an indication of what you think that bowl is going to do this year. So there's so many possible scenarios on matchups where you really don't pick a favorite.
Now, Tech was in the game last year. So would you go, we don't really want them, you know, to repeat that? Or would you go, no, we'd love to have Tech come back again?
You know, last year was an anomaly because of what happened with the team that wasn't able to field a team. Yeah. And so I think you have to take that into consideration, too. Tech also had to win their last two games, I believe, this season to get to 7-5, which was a strong finish. So I don't think you ever rule anything out when there's extenuating circumstances from the previous year.
Some of the teams that you mentioned, one Western Kentucky, maybe Cincinnati, as I hear you say those schools, I hate to say this on the air, but that sure don't sound sexy. You know what I mean? Are they going to bring a lot of fans? Are they going to bring a lot of money? Are those some things you have to consider too?
Yeah, what teams travel well?
Yeah, you do consider those. Now, the teams themselves they will spend a lot of money on the trip, and that's standard across the bowls. And so you look at Western Kentucky has a pretty good national name, so it's recognizable. You know, they've had good teams. And so you look at that. And with where we are in the selection order on the Big 12 side, it's probably going to be, you know, the team that's there for us is the team that we get. And because they have 7 qualifiers right now, they have 6 bowl partners after the CFP, after the playoffs. So you just got to look at the trickle down from there. And so I think it's looking at, you know, some years we've had a team that was somewhat regional and then a team that had a national name, and that worked out really well. And then other times you have 2 teams that are regional, and then we've had teams that there was nothing regional about it. So there's always the positives to find no matter what the matchup is. And those teams are coming here for 4 nights in the hotel minimum, and their bands are hopefully coming in. So there's a lot of trickle down economically from that, but you always hope that you get something regional so that you have easy fan travel. I know our game date being on Tuesday the 30th seems to be pretty conducive to fan travel this year based on what we're seeing in some of the podcast comments and some of the radio show comments and things like that. So hopefully that works in our favor, having a good travel day that's far enough away from Christmas that people can make the trip.
Tickets now, you can get them at the Independence Bowl's website, correct? And you've got family packages, you've got business, but you've got all kind of great deals. You just need to go check it out, right?
We do. We've got group offers that we're working on right now, the family 4-pack. We have an ultimate fan experience that you can sign up for that's pretty cool. And one thing we need to add about the family 4-pack, in the past, the food was not available in the stadium. This year it is. So Pizza Hut will be providing the food in stadium. So if you've got a family of four or whatever you might be, it's a great deal. You feed your family, you go to the game, you have a great time. And so I think that improvement hopefully will mean a lot for us this year.
You just brought it, led into my next question for people traveling in and for locals that want to go and support the game. Tell us a little bit about the experience, like concessions and things like that, that are going to be available at Independence Stadium.
Yeah, we have quite a few local concessionaires this year. We're really excited about that. So you'll get a good feel for the cuisine that we have here. We've got great local partners that'll have their own concession stand set up, and then we'll have traditional concession or football food, I guess, stadium food there. So we've got a really good variety, the best that we've had in a long, long time, and we're happy about that. We appreciate the local partnerships. A lot of that is highlighted on our website, and so you'll see more about that in the coming days too. It's about supporting community. You know, it's a great opportunity to take your family out. We've got people that tell us, you know, I've been going to this game with my son or with my kids for the last 20, 30 years, and this is a family tradition. And so that's what we're trying to build on. The experience to us is very important, and we worked really hard in the last few years to try to improve that experience for people as far as whether it's, you know, ingress to the stadium, egress after the stadium, the concession offerings that we have in the stadium. And there's something constantly going on during the game, too, entertainment-wise.
One more thing before we let you go. Sunday afternoon, you make your selections. Take me inside a baseball a minute. How does that work? Do you call the coach? Do you call the athletic director and make them an offer and they accept it on the phone? How does that happen? And what time Sunday?
Well, a lot of it starts to trickle down after the championship games, but then you can't fully do anything until those final rankings come out. That day is we have a selection committee that will be up here at a specific time, and then it's constant phone calls, constant emails, just working to see, you know, where do we think those playoff rankings are going to land, and then how does that work through the bowl system. Calling the ADs once we know who our teams are, calling the head coaches, officially inviting them, giving them a little heads up on what to expect, and then we've immediately got to get the teams in here usually on Monday, Tuesday, or Tuesday, Wednesday, and do their site visits where they go to the team hotels, they go pick out practice sites. We take them to the venues where we have all of the public events and the private events. And so it's a four days full of promoting our cities.
Mm. Missy Setters, Executive Director with the Independence Bowl. Missy, thanks again. We appreciate it. And we'll talk again before the bowl.
Sounds good. Y'all have a great day.
Take care.
You too. Mike and McCarty coming up after the break. Greg is out and about. In fact, he's at Brookshire's Mansfield Road. Greg Adams with Operation Santa Claus, how you can help next. 101.7 FM, 710 KU.
Now more breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 KU.
December 2nd. Gosh. December 2nd.
Unreal.
Operation Santa Claus is officially underway. Greg Adams is at Brookshire's on Mansfield Road. And Greg, what are we looking at? What does Operation Santa Claus need?
Right now we are, like every year, mainly looking for bicycles or skateboards or scooters. Those are the things that are most requested during Operation Santa Claus. But in all honesty, after doing this for a long enough time, the best donation is monetary donations, because Operation Santa Claus, the Shreveport Police Department, Shreveport Fire Department, they have the ability to go to some of our other partners, our retail partners, and say, we need to purchase 200 bikes. And they can get the type of discounts that you and I can't get if we were to go buy some bikes. So if you can't show up with a trailer full of bicycles, we'll take that gladly. But if you can make a monetary donation, that will go a long way in helping Operation Santa Claus this year.
You can also drop off a donation at any Bonvenue Bank branch in Shreveport and Bossier, too, if you want to just pass by one of those and tell them it's for Operation Santa Claus. But y'all will be there at Brookshire's, Burt Coons, and Mansfield Road until 9 today. And have you been busy? Has it been a little slow? Is it picking up?
It's been a little slow this morning. I'm going to blame the cold, though. It is a little chilly this morning, but we do have a tunnel of flashing lights that you can roll up and make your donation. You don't have to leave the vehicle. We got firefighters, we got police officers that come up to your window to get a monetary donation. If you've got a trunk full of toys, you can pop the trunk, they'll unload there. And if you don't have time to make it here by 9 o'clock this morning, we are going to be back out on Thursday morning. We're going to be at Brookshire's on Line Avenue. That's also going to be 7 a.m. to 9. And that's one of the great things about this, and I see it every single year, is if you've got kids, if you've got nieces and nephews, if you've got grandkids, this is right before school, so you're probably already on your way taking the kids to school. If you have the ability to make a donation, it's great to show the kids what it means to make donations, especially this time of year. Start them early, show them what it is about, and on top of that, they love to see the fire trucks. We've got a ladder truck out here this morning. Kids love the fire trucks. It's a great opportunity. It's a learning opportunity for the kids on their way to school.
Greg Adams, Operation Santa Claus, be there till 9 o'clock, Brookshire's on Mansfield Road. Thank you, Greg. Stay wrapped up.
Hey, I'm fine. I can wear shorts.
Michigan boy. That's I forgot right. about that. Yeah.
101.7 FM, 710 Keel, Mike and McCarty.
Back with McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Keel.
$10 million revenue bonds, sheriff's North Market substation, all that and more. Caddo Parish Commissioner Chris Crackman spoke to us this morning. We'll hear from him coming up just after the break. Mike and McCarty, 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
Let's get back to the show with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710keel.
Caddo Parish Commissioner Chris Crackman joining us on the Jack Spring Electric Newsmaker Hotline. Chris, good morning.
Morning, guys. How are y'all?
Doing great. Thank you for joining us.
What is the status with regard to what Sheriff Henry Whitehorn wants with regard to the North Market substation? We want to move out of that and a new location. Explain what's going on.
More or less, he has, you know, made us aware that he wants to move and where he wants to move to. We don't know the exact numbers on, you know, how much the place cost or what it's going to take to retrofit it or move to it or anything like that. So more or less, we're letting Sheriff Whitehorn know what we're offering instead of, you know, saying what exactly do you want. We're putting the cards on the table and saying, here's what we've got.
So what is he's wanting the Mitsubishi complex? Tell us what he's looking at and where is it?
Yeah, it's the former Mitsubishi place over there. I can't even remember where it's at, but it's ironic because I just bought a car there right before they went out of business. So I'm a little, you know, still a little sore about it.
Is it in the auto mall?
Yeah. Sheriff Whitehorn could have gave me a heads up, as a matter of fact. But no, I mean, it's the old, I can't think of the name of it. It's the old Mitsubishi dealership, and it's a nice facility, and it has a shop and all of the needs and wants that they have to where they can centrally locate, you know, all of their offices and everything. And you know, it would be a nice addition to all the places that they have. But, of course, we want to be as fiscally responsible as possible and as prudent as possible. And, you know, this other facility that they have is, you know, allegedly dilapidated. I haven't been there. I've seen the slides and the photographs. We have three commissioners that paid that facility a visit, and they all agree that it's dilapidated and it has mold and all these other things. It seems a little tricky because I guess we're on the hook for the health, safety, and welfare of all of those, you know, officers that work there. But allegedly they're working in a unsafe atmosphere. So I don't know how long we have to fix what they have or get them out of there or whatever. But a decision does need to be made, you know, either way, whether we're going to fix what they have or move them. But, you know, yesterday I would have liked to have had a little bit more information on the cost because, you know, we can act like a lot of this money falls out of thin air or it comes out of, you know, our own pocket or it's a donation or something like that. But at the end of the day, whether it be
the Kettle Parish Sheriff's Department or the tax dollars. It is your dollars. It's tax dollars. So, you know, I want to be as fiscally responsible as possible.
Okay. I understand the building may be $5.5 million. What would be the parish's share? And the sheriff is going to pay for some. Am I hearing that right?
Right. And I don't remember what it was he was asking for. I want to say it was 2.8 mil, something like that from us. And it more or less wanted us to pay half of that, half of the retrofit, and then not maintenance it for up to 4 years, that they would foot that bill. And again, I don't remember what all the ask was. I do know it was a little non-specific, and that's kind of what I was asking for yesterday. And I think what we have put on the table is, you know, 2.5, and kind of see what Whitehorn thinks about that. Of course, you know, we have a budget meeting today, and we'll talk about it some more. I think it, you know, it might be a long conversation, but there's no doubt in anybody's mind that we want to do something different or better, whether it be fix what they have or move them. You know, a lot of folks were talking about, you know, supporting the guys in blue, and, you know, these are our first responders and all this other. Well, all 12 of us support our guys in blue. We all want to see them in a better scenario, better conditions. There's no question about that. It's just how much of, you know, taxpayers' dollars do we want to put toward it?
So it's standing at 2.5 right now. Let me switch gears for just a moment, Chris Crackman, Caddo Parish Commissioner, and talk about the $10 million revenue bonds. And one of the big hopes is the pickleball complex. Is this money, is any money going to be dedicated specifically for the pickleball park, or is it all general funds?
See, I didn't know we were talking about the P word. Now I feel a little uncomfortable. no, you know, the revenue bonds, as far as I know, which is not much, you know, y'all could have called somebody a little more educated than I, but as far as I gather, the revenue bonds are non-specific. They don't have pickleball written all over them. It's $10 million, for facilities. And if you go back and listen to the interview with our state treasurer that y'all did, he made that, you know, pretty crystal clear that those bonds could be used for CCC, juvenile justice, Caddo Parish Courthouse, you know, all these existing buildings and so forth. So they are non-specific. So, you know, if we wanted to, we could say, hey, let's take a sliver of this 10 mil and put it toward Whitehorn's, you know, venture over there at the old Mitsubishi place. I don't believe we'll do that, but it is a potential.
Now, you voted against the revenue bonds. I think you were the only one. Explain why you said we don't need to be going out and borrowing this money right now.
Well, look, again, you know, I have to look at it like I'm spending somebody else's money, and I am. We are. I don't think that that's the most responsible venture we could go into. I don't think a pickleball complex is the most intelligent thing we could do. I hope I'm wrong. But, you know, I stand by that. And my constituents, you know, all the ones that reached out to me, they agree with me. I had one constituent that disagreed with me and asked that I support the $10 million revenue bonds. Now, these revenue bonds are available because it went out to a public for Walter B. Jacobs upgrade. Mm-hmm. That was what the people voted for, and it is complete. We're doing the ribbon cutting on Thursday. Mm-hmm. And so the people got what they voted for. Now, if there's change, you know, that's a different story. I believe that folks should be able to have a say whenever we spend millions of dollars. We're not buying a new office chair. We're
right.
Spending $10 million.
And I got a question about that Chris Crackman. I got a question about that exactly from someone who has been in a leadership position in our community. How about government not take the most expensive properties in our city? I mean, that's an expensive property. Couldn't we do better with with something that's not quite that pricey?
Sure, I would imagine. And you know, they did a lot of studies as far as the location of it. and everything. I think a lot of the commissioners would like to see something a little more centrally located. I don't know, you know, whether it be centrally or not, whether it be an expensive property or a cheap property, $10 million investment is ridiculous to me as far as taxpayer dollars goes, especially whenever, you know, OJJ has a deficit. You know, juvenile justice, it's behind. We failed a bond. The general public failed a bond, you know, to upgrade juvenile justice. Mm-hmm. So that problem still exists.
Yep.
CCC being you know, overhoused, that problem still exists. And now we have a new problem with the being dilapidated. So, you know, we're piling up our problems, and we're not piling up our solutions, but we're putting $10 million towards pickleball. I hate to be the bad guy in the room, but I do think that that is not very fiscally responsible of us with $10 million worth of revenue bond. Mm-hmm.
But it's not just putting it into pickleball for locals to go play. It's actually an investment to bring a lot of tournaments here. It's revenue generating for the entire area.
Right. It's your government and a group of bureaucrats and your elected officials that are going into what otherwise would be a private business. I don't think the government should be going into business, especially, you know, as far as bringing in tournaments and tourism and all this other. I don't think that that's our job. And, you know, it's funny because a lot of us conservatives, we want to go out here and talk about Zohran Mamdani and making government-owned grocery stores, and we're kicking and screaming about New York. But when we want to open a sports facility here locally on the same kind of rhetoric, it's a different story. And I think that that's kind of comical, to be honest. But I do think that this should be a private venture. I mean, you know, I've heard a lot of people say, you know, this would be a lot better if this were private, but I support it. I don't.
Well, the Superdome is not private. A private venture, but we're out of time. We can go deep into that. But I understand what you're saying, and appreciate you taking the time to join us.
Sure, no problem at all. I was kind of hoping to hear somebody talk on this matter that was a little more educated on it than me, so maybe y'all could fish somebody up.
We have requested the sheriff to join us, so we're working on that, and we will also get another commissioner on to talk about that one day this week.
Excellent.
Chris, thank you so much.
All right, thank y'all.
Talk to you soon. 101.7 FM, 710keel.com.
More breaking news and trending talk with Mike and McCarty on 101.7 FM and 710 Key.
This was pretty cool last night on The Voice.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what happened.
Max Chambers, the 14-year-old Shreve Porter, they're in the playoff rounds, and he's on the Michael Bublé team, and he did a Sam Cooke tune.
Knocking me down on my knees. like I'm able to carry on.